everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who doesn't take it real seriously.
But who does have a good story about his cat coming up right after this.
I'd love to hear it for the first time.
That's what happened to Lewis yesterday? Old Lewis? No. Old shitbird Lewis?
No, what happened to shitbird Lewis?
Lewis is one of the cats, by the way. For anybody just tuning in to the last handful of episodes, Lewis is one of my two cats. He's the worst of the two cats. Just, you know,
in which way? In all the ways?
You'll see. Okay. So we went to get them their annual shots, you know, because I guess they need shots.
Let me stop you right there. Here's how you avoid all this. Yeah. You don't take your pets to the vet.
So, spoiler alert, this is the last time any of these guys are going to any sort of a professional. Uh-huh. So we didn't take them to like a real veterinarian. We took them to like Petco does like the normal shots.
Right. You know, it's not like a dumpster. You saw this cardboard sign and said, "Bring me your pets."
It's like you either pay somebody like $300 with like an MD behind their name to stick a needle in your cat's butt, or you pay a high school student, you know, $15 an hour to stick a needle in your cat's butt.
They do it for fun.
It's the same needle. It's the same uh-huh. needle. The high schoolers uh-huh. aren't like mixing it up in the back. They pull it out of the same package. So we take the cats to Petco. They just do mm-hmm. so. They just do it in the store practically.
It's like the Bloodmobile of vets.
It kind
of
is. Yeah. Cats hate it. It's just like the bedside manner. You know what?
They don't like the real vet either.
They really don't. But I think they can tell. I think they can tell. They walk in and they're like, "This doesn't feel like a professional place at all."
Mm. It really doesn't. Smells like birds. Yeah. I don't. What are we doing here?
We're between like a Smoothie King and Schnucks. I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be getting shots.
I would like a smoothie though.
Yes, I was on the way out. If I was good, which I won't be, then I'd like to get a smoothie.
Yeah. Okay.
So they get their shots. It's like rabies and, you know, I don't know, feline leukemia. Who knows? Sure. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No, you're not a vet.
I don't work there. Mm-mm. I pay someone $15 an hour to figure out which shots go in the cat and which cat.
That's right. Yeah.
So we get home and Lewis immediately starts like just chain vomiting and his face
oh, no.
and his face swells up and turns like bright red and he's starting to gag for air.
How do you tell that his face turns bright red? It's covered in fur.
So he has white fur mm-hmm. and the skin underneath of it turns so bright red, almost like yours, my friend, that thanks. You can tell through the hair. I can tell through your hair. That your skin, yeah, yeah. Your skin, yeah. I can see through there.
You still know.
I can still tell. Yeah. So he turns bright red, starts gagging, can't breathe, constant throw up. So we drive him to the emergency vet, and it turns out our sweet, stupid little prince is allergic to the rabies vaccine.
Really?
Yeah. So guess who is just going to get rabies now? Because I really don't care.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, just all you got to do is watch Old Yeller with the girls a couple times. Mm-hmm. Get him a little inoculated.
Get him pumped up.
Feeling.
Or, yeah. No, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Real jazz.
Get him psyched up. So.
Do you have a shed in the back of your house that you could tie Lewis to?
It would have been cheaper to build the shed than it would mm-hmm. have been to take him to the emergency vet at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night.
That's why we don't take our cats to the vet. If they're sick, they'll tell us. And so far, they've not said a word.
Exactly. Yep. So this is our new path as well.
That's cool.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. Good. Allergic to the rabies shot.
Allergic to the rabies shot. Yeah. Now, the other thought, and I asked the vet this, and she didn't give me a straight answer. I don't think she took me seriously. I said, what if he already has rabies? Wouldn't the rabies shot make him really sick then? And then she left the room. And I was like, well.
Okay. Okay. So you're probably not invited back, actually.
No, neither of those places, but neither are they. So.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Right. So it's a win-win, really. This has been a great weekend for you.
I'm crossing a lot of people off the list this weekend.
Yeah.
So cool. Yeah. And so then, so then the doc says every 8 hours for the next 48 hours, you have to break a Benadryl in half and feed it to your cat.
Oh, shit. You're putting that cat on Benadryl?
I said, well, yeah, because that's like he's...
I can't even do half a Benadryl without just totally zonking.
Yeah. Well, imagine if you were 12 pounds. Imagine if you were a newborn baby.
That's half percent of my body weight.
Right. So the doc says you have to give this cat every 8 hours half of a Benadryl. And we're like, okay, the Benadryl pills, they're so small. And then, but on the way out the door, the doc goes, oh, by the way, the cats hate the taste of the Benadryl pill. I said, man.
Do you have any like catching gear you could put on or anything like that of that nature?
So, so Amy manages to like grind up the Benadryl and mix it in with like those, like, you give your cats like the ketchup packets full of like throw up or whatever the fuck that stuff is.
No, they don't like that. They don't like eating the throw up out of the goo bag.
Yeah. So our cats used to like it. But when you mix Benadryl in with it, apparently they get wise to it and refuse to eat it.
One of the things that cats are like, all animals really are pretty good at is smelling stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're not very tricked by the whole hide it in their food thing.
But I figured the throw up packets would smell so bad in the first place. They wouldn't be able to tell, you know, the underlying hints of Benadryl. The cat won't take the medicine. Mm-hmm. So I'm at work and Amy texts me and she goes, I'm having a really hard time getting this cat to take the pill. You know, I can't get the pill down the cat's throat. And I said, well, you just gotta keep it, you know? Yeah. So then she texts me back about 10 minutes later and she goes, well, the cat did take the pill, but, first when I went to throw the pill down his throat, I said, I'm sorry.
So, yep. Yeah. It's like, yep.
When I went to throw the pill,
taking notes right here. I got one of those. Yep.
Check. When I went to throw the pill down his throat, mm-hmm. he turned his head real quick and I threw it down into his ear. I said, what? And she said, so I had to flip him on his side like a piggy bank and shake the pill back out of his head.
But that earwax made it go down real smooth.
And I told her, really, you probably just could have put, just, you know, poured a half a cup of water in there and it probably would all dissolved and he would have been fine. So anyway, it's been last 24 hours of my day.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's been awesome.
Well, that's exciting about your cat. The swelling has gone down, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, he is back to normal stupid size.
He's good?
Yes.
Good. That's great. Okay. We'll add I'll see if I can find an appropriate sound for Rabies Watch. And we'll pepper that in every once in a while and see how he's doing. All right. Well, I have pretty explosive news, actually.
Hey!
So loud. So we received an email from one of our listeners whose name purports to be Amity, mm-hmm. as in Ville Horror.
Right. Yes.
And Amityville sent an email. I just want to read it to you.
Yeah.
And I think you'll enjoy it.
Yep. Oh, you're going to read it. Oh, I'll take my glasses back off.
I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
Amity says, I was just listening through the earlier episodes again, the good old days of Pickney Bend, and I noticed something, but first I need to include a more recent detail. In episode 150, mm-hmm. the St. Augustine Lighthouse, mm-hmm. Patrick made an odd comment about a certain material called coquina.
Mm, I did. It became quite controversial.
Yes, it did. The Discord was in disarray mm-hmm. for weeks. Around the 15-minute, 45-second mark, you mentioned coquina, and Patrick commented on it as though he had heard of it before. He recalled that coquina was involved in an earlier episode. He also tried to connect it to a man who created a Florida Stonehenge. I have no clue what he was talking about here. With this coquina in mind, let's go all the way back to episode 22.
22?
22.
Wow, we were just children then.
Not yet men. Oh, for those days of yesteryear.
Not yet men.
Didn't have any children. Now between the two of us, we've got 19. You have any guesses on what episode 22 was?
No fucking clue. I'm hoping it's one that vindicates me, but I've been let down before.
Well, let's see. Episode 22, Halloween Spooktacular, The Whaley House. This episode was the first that Patrick ever researched, starting the beloved iTag tradition of swapping roles for the Halloween episode. Hmm. In this episode, at around 28 minutes and 20 seconds, Patrick mentions a, quote, plaster from ground-up seashells. This is exactly what coquina is. Mm-hmm. So when you mentioned it in episode 150, this is what I think he was thinking of.
Mm.
And so this suggests that Aaron's theory and some other folks' theories was correct, that you had accidentally learned too much about coquina, but did not include it in the full story that you researched. You accidentally researched too much.
I was sampling my own stuff. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Ernie says, hope this finds you, this find this helpful. Thank you for doing what you do. Thank you, Amity. That's very good to hear.
It is good to hear. I feel not vindicated.
You shouldn't feel vindicated.
Right.
Because
yes.
You still, you did a bad job still.
I think I did still manage to Mandela a handful of people in the Discord that now recall the details about the doors that could be pushed with one finger.
And that's no small feat.
Correct. Yeah.
We've certainly never talked about that. But thank you, Amity, for sleuthing that out for us, because it's been driving some people in the iTech circles a little crazy the last couple months.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting indeed. All right. That is, I think, my only update. Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Please. Yes. It's apt.
It really fits you today.
Yeah.
Alonzo Hubel Williams was born on December 22nd, 1891, in Macedonia, Alabama.
I was going to reframe my entire understanding of world geography, and then you put it right back for me. I appreciate that.
I saved it for you. Mm-hmm. No problem. Macedonia, Alabama. Alonzo Hubel Williams. Here is a photo of him.
Oh, that's a good old boy right there.
That's a good old boy.
Mm-hmm. Clean shaven. Okay. Some sort of like a butcher's frock or something. I don't know what that is. He has a rifle. But I don't really, I don't understand the collar.
It looks like he's about to get bloody with something.
It does. It does indeed. It looks like he maybe shot something. Now he's going to take it apart in the field. That's what it looks like.
And he's pretty excited about it, but he doesn't want to look too excited for the picture
because
he knows that'll make him look like a psychopath.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
But he's jazzed.
No matter what that hat says, not a psychopath.
So that's Alonzo. His family had been in Alabama for several generations. His father had fought for the Confederacy in the Civil War. Until he was captured by the Union, at which point he decided to fight for the North instead.
Did you know they have food?
I like it here.
You know that the longer they fight, the further south they get and the warmer it is? Do you know the further north we go, it is horribly cold.
When I fight for you, I have to go to Virginia, and the mountains there are pretty chilly. When I fight for the North, I'm down in New Orleans. This is great.
They say we will see the ocean soon. I do not doubt it.
So that's his dad. Now, Alonzo, he's growing up, and he meets a, quote, broad-boned, strong-willed woman named Jessie Lily Bell Skipper.
Everyone's got a type.
Everyone's got a type. He falls in head over heels immediately for this broad-boned, strong-willed Jessie Lily Bell Skipper.
Broad-boned doesn't seem like an advantage. I think you want...
During these times, yeah.
Like, but the...
Listen,
the bones.
One of us is going to have to fight a bear.
Okay.
It's not going to be me.
Yeah, I want to meet a woman with bones like a window pane. That's what I want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's mass.
Yes.
That's center of gravity stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. Here's a fun fact.
Wham!
Jessie Lily Bell Skipper went by the name Lily, but her nickname... was Little Skipper. Now, here is a photo, let me pull up here, of Lily Bell, Skipper.
Is she going to look like Barbie's sister? Nope.
Mm-mm.
Not close.
No, not that. Barbie's little sister Skipper is not based on Little Skipper.
No, that's...
But you get the broad boned.
Yes, the broad bones immediately come to the forefront. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She is also, I'm going to say a good 3 feet taller than he is.
He is sitting down. I will point out that. Alonzo went to the land of the frost giants and he found himself a broad boned monster. But yeah, I love this. I don't know what background this pattern is in the background, but
it looks almost like ground up seashells. Huh? I can't tell.
That sounds familiar somehow. So that's the happy couple. So Alonzo and Little Skipper are married on November 12th, 1916. Alonzo was a railroad engineer for the W.T. Smith Lumber Company. So I guess he transported lumber probably.
I guess so. Sure.
I guess. Everything's going pretty well. or as well as it could be for rural Alabama in the 1916. But in July of 1918, Alonzo gets a letter in the mail, or probably a telegraph, I guess.
Yeah.
Letting him know he's drafted into World War One.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that one sucked.
Yeah, it's not cool like that second one.
Well, the first one, Snoopy was in the first one, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, I would, there are worse wars to get drafted into than one you might see a dog wearing goggles flying through the air on a red doghouse. That's cool.
Boy, I'm glad he's on our side. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, and there's snow cones raining down from the heavens. So Alonzo goes to war. He serves for just 1 year. He's released in June 1919 from a severe injury. Now, there are three separate stories of how this injury came to be.
Oh, okay.
We're not quite sure which one it was.
I'll tell you which one it was.
Okay. Number one, shell shock from a German bomb.
Shell shock from a German bomb. Okay, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, lots of bombs blow up. So maybe.
So,
yeah, sure. But also, a lot of bombs blow up. So, like, why would one of them... Anyway.
Maybe it's like the Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes. Maybe it's just like, bomb, ow, bomb, ow, bomb, ow, bomb, ow. So that's okay. One. So number two, he fell off a truck, broke his collarbone, and that rung his damn bell.
Not close to the first one. That's, I figured they would all be like similar. This is not close. Okay.
It's not even similar.
Fell off a truck. I'm leaning closer to two at this point.
Okay. Okay. Number three. He got into a bar fight over a woman and got knocked upside the head real hard with a bottle of wine.
I'm going to have to go back to two on this one. I've seen his broad-boned wife, and this man seems like he has no needs at this point. All his needs are satisfied. I'm going to go with
absolutely.
Two.
Absolutely. All right. All right. Patrick has made a decision. He fell off a truck. However it happened, Alonzo's injury is severe, and it's permanent. So Alonzo comes home. After a couple of years later, he and Little Skipper have their first child.
Oh.
Ernest Hubel Williams.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That baby dies 2 days after birth.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's not good. It's not good. A year later, they have a second child, a daughter named Irene.
Hmm.
She does great.
For?
Life.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought we were going to.
Her four-day life. No, just kidding. She's fine. She goes on to live for a good long time. Mm-hmm. Then on September 17th, 1923, they have their third and final child, Hiram.
Oh, yes. That's another good one.
Yeah. That's a great name.
Ernest, Lily, Hiram. That's the kids.
Ernest, Irene,
Hiram. Yeah, where'd he get Lily from? Ernest, Irene.
That's the mom.
Hiram. That's the mom. Right.
Yeah. So Hiram is born with spina bifida occulta.
Oh.
Which is not what you like.
No.
As a baby or as a human, as a grown-up person. Mm-hmm. This is a defect of the spinal column. It causes him pain his entire life, which I will say, again, is substantial.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We're talking measured in...
At least 10 years.
Measured in weeks, if not months.
Yeah. When he was a toddler, Hiram would sit with Little Skipper when she played the organ at the Mount Olive Baptist Church. And he really liked it. When he was 6 years old, he received his first musical instrument, a harmonica.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what you want to give your six-year-old, a fucking harmonica. he had a good little life, despite the spina bifida. He has a few nicknames for his family and his friends. His family called him Harm.
Harm, okay, like Hiram. Harm. But also
like Hiram, but like
damaged.
Problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his friends called him Herky or Skeets.
Hmm. None of these are as offensive as I was expecting. Horrifying nicknames for the child with spina bifida in rural Alabama. I just was. I really was.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but yeah, he's a likable kid.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's a fun fact.
Wham!
When he was 10 years old, his parents finally got him a birth certificate.
Oh.
And... you'll love this. Hiram's name was misspelled Hiram. And just like you, they could not figure out how to fix it. So Hiram he goes.
Hiram we go.
By the way, speaking of, we also got a message from gosh, I don't remember who it was now. Someone emailed or social media messaged us and said they had the same issue. I don't remember if it was, this is a terrible story now. Either they had made the mistake on their children's birth certificate or their parents had made the mistake on theirs. Mm-hmm. They said, tell Patrick it was actually super easy to fix.
Really?
And I'll dig up the message. I forgot to tell you that one. Yeah, so you got, there's hope for you.
Okay.
If you're just joining the show, Patrick really fucked up his daughter's birth certificate
in one a real of them, severe way. I have lots of daughters, just the one. The
first one was a practice run.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now Alonzo moves around a lot for work. It's hard for him to hold on to a job because he's got the falling off the truck injury.
Sure, yeah.
You know, every time he moves, his family moves with him. So they're moving all over Alabama. Mm-hmm. In 1930, Alonzo starts experiencing facial paralysis.
Oh, no.
So he goes to a VA clinic. Now, he has to go all the way to Florida. I think he has to go to the Panhandle somewhere. Mm-hmm. They determine there he had had a brain aneurysm.
Oh, okay.
But they tell him, really, like, you're actually quite lucky because most people will die from that, you know, but you had a stroke, but, you know.
Unfortunately, you do have to go back to Alabama. So.
No, actually, as a matter of fact, they sent him to a different hospital in Louisiana. So the VA clinic is in Florida. Alabama is kind of a dead zone, and Louisiana is where the hospital is.
Right, and he's trying to clarify with the doctors, like, and I can have another aneurysm in Louisiana, right? They have them there? Okay, I just want to make sure.
Just in case. Now, my insurance is Alabama. Do I get either of these covered? No? Okay,
that's great news. Thank you.
Yeah. So he goes to Louisiana to the VA hospital. He is hospitalized for the next 8 years. So Lily, little Skipper, is raising the kids on her own. A few years later, her sister is like, hey, Lily, can our daughter Opal come live with you? and I think she was going to school nearby. And they're like, it would just be so much easier.
Yeah.
If she could just live with you for a few years.
What's that Jim Gaffigan joke about having four kids or something like that? It's like you're drowning and then someone hands you a baby.
Yeah. But Lily's no fool. And she says, yeah, okay, I'll take Opal, but then you're taking Hiram.
Oh, swapping. A swapsie. Okay. Swapsies. Okay.
And then her sister's like, all right, cool.
Wow.
So they swap. Hiram goes to live with Uncle Walter and Aunt Alice for a few years. Mm-hmm. Now, Aunt Alice starts teaching him some simple guitar chords.
Oh.
And he likes it. He likes music. He likes harmonica. Mm-hmm. He's interested in this, you know. Mm-hmm. So he starts playing guitar. Alice asks her sister, you know, can you send Hiram a guitar? He's really into it. Mm-hmm. Can do this. And apparently, despite the fact that Alonzo is in the hospital long-term, the family's actually they're not doing great financially, but they're not doing horribly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got guitar money.
They got guitar money. Yeah. They certainly use guitar money for sure. Mm-hmm. Lily had taken on like 1,000 jobs, to keep the family going. And also several years into Alonzo stay in the hospital. A U.S. representative named J. Lister Hill from Alabama. He helps the family actually tap into Alonzo's disability pension.
Oh,
they didn't know there was one.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, let me help you get the money that you were owed.
Man, how long ago was this?
This was so long ago. This was so long ago. This is more than 100 years ago. If you're wondering how an Alabama politician did a good thing. Oh. Times do change. Anyway, so Lily has some money. So she buys Hiram a used guitar for $3.50. Ooh. He gets a little older. He's playing the guitar. He's not very good yet, but he doesn't have a teacher.
Right. He's got his aunt.
She knows some simple chords.
Yeah, she knows three chords. She's probably in a punk band.
She knows
band.
More than I do.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's power chord one, power chord two.
He can only play Crazy Train. Yeah. It's really weird.
Here's a little one I like to call the beginning of Iron Man.
So he wants to learn more. He moves back in with Lily, with his mom. Eventually they swap back. Mm-hmm. And he's a gangly, kind of shy, early teen kid. He attaches himself to an old black man in town named Rufus T-Tot Payne. It goes by T-Tot. Mm-hmm. And if watching movies and those tropes have ever taught me anything, you want to attach yourself to an old wise black man.
Absolutely.
Teach you everything you need to know. T-Tot was a street performer. And Hiram would just kind of follow him around and just try to, you know, soak it all in, I guess. T-Tot agrees to give Hiram lessons in exchange for meals prepared by Lily.
Oh.
And she's a great cook. He likes food. Mm-hmm.
He's a human. He likes eating.
His body runs on fuel. So they swapsies that. And so Hiram learns to play the blues because he's learning from this old black man, of course. Mm-hmm. And that's what he knows most. But T-Tot also teaches Hiram, this is going to be important, teaches him how to be a showman. Uh-huh. Teaches him stoops, bows, laughs, the old stomp and holler.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right. Yeah, that move where like you throw the guitar over your shoulder and it comes back around here and you act surprised it came back.
Yeah, and then you do the splits right at the end.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All that
so
stuff.
So cool. So Hiram's having a blast. Now, he's also going to school.
Not for long. Fuck this.
Let's see. In 1937, when he's 14 years old, Hiram gets into a fist fight with his PE teacher.
It's not the one you want to fight. Let's be honest.
No. They get into a fight because Hiram doesn't want to do the exercises that the coach is asking him to do. Mm-hmm. So totally justified, in my opinion. Lily finds out about this. She goes to the school board, and she demands that they fire the coach.
Because the boy has spina bifida at this point still, right?
Yeah, that is true. He's the coach is punching down quite literally. Yeah. Stop stooping so much.
Presidential Fitness says you need to do 25 sit-ups in 20 minutes.
God damn you, Bill Clinton or George Bush or whoever did that.
How many
kids run a mile in 8 minutes?
How many kids?
I'm four.
How many kids threw up in a Catholic school parking lot because of those stupid rules?
In the air. She tells the school board, you got to fire this coach. The school board refuses to fire the coach. And so Lily says, well, fuck you. And she moves the family. They go to Montgomery, Alabama. They will not go to this coach's school anymore. And I will just take this opportunity to say my parents never stood up to my PE teachers like that. Not even once. Hiram's so lucky. I don't think Miss Haley's listening, but if she is, boy, I did like Bombardment. But one time we maybe played some game that I hated and I don't remember what it's called, but it had a wiffle ball and it was just boring. Mm. I hated that.
Well.
Anyway, so they moved to Montgomery, which means, among other things, Hiram and T-Tot lose touch. But Hiram's otherwise pretty excited for the move. Montgomery is a sizable town, and he has a chance to really reinvent himself. So to start, he decides to tell people that his name is not Hiram, it's Hank.
Oh, okay.
So Hank Williams plays his first talent show in Montgomery at the Empire Theater that same year, wins a first prize of $15, which is, you want to guess today?
Yeah, you could buy four guitars with that first off.
That's right.
It's about $300. Right about.
It's exactly $300 today. Good job. Good job. He couldn't read music. He'd never learned to read music, and he never would learn how to read music, so he just kind of did his own thing. He wrote his own songs based on his own life and used like storytelling methods to remember them because he couldn't read the notes.
Right.
But he does okay with that.
Yeah, I hear he's okay, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He did fine. Yeah. He sometimes got invited to play on the radio on the local station, WSFA. Now in August 1938, Alonzo, his dad, is released from the hospital. He shows up the family's new home in Montgomery, but Lily refuses to let him reclaim the spot as head of the family.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
She's like, absolutely not. This is my family. Mm-hmm. You can stay here if you want, but you're getting to work and I make the decisions.
Wow. Okay.
So Alonzo goes back to Louisiana and checks himself back into the hospital.
You know, Doc, I think I did have another one of those aneurysms.
I'll go check. Just make sure. Yeah.
How would one give oneself an aneurysm? I do wonder. Yeah. Well, better get the jello back out because I am here to stay.
So he's back out of the picture. He was he did stay for Hank's birthday that year, which was nice. But then he turns around and leaves him forever. Now, Hank is, as you will not be surprised to learn, he's doing great with music.
Mm-hmm.
He starts his own band called the Drifting Cowboys. They play all around Alabama.
Cool.
Lily becomes their manager.
Oh, okay.
In 1939, Hank drops out of school so he can play in the band full time. He also gets a gig hosting a radio show part-time at that WSFA station in Montgomery. Hmm. And the band starts really touring. They play at honky-tonks all around Alabama and Florida. And so they're blowing up. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing a good job right off the bat. During their time at honky-tonks, this is when Hank Williams discovers alcohol.
Oh. I mean, and it's probably good for him.
Yeah, I think so. Let's find out. He starts spending a lot of his... This is probably not when he discovered alcohol.
Right.
He sure does start drinking a whole lot of it.
Imagine him like down in a cave with a pick and an axe and a big light. What is this thing I found down here?
There's so much dust on this bottle. What could it be? He starts spending a lot of his revenue on drinks. But everyone around him is like, that's fine.
Yeah,
he's a young man, just living his life. Mm-hmm.
Having a fun time.
His mom's right there.
Yeah. What's the worst thing?
And she is. Yeah. So I guess it's fine. And then in 1941, America enters into World War II.
Ooh.
Way less cool than World War I. Or no, yeah. way more cool than World War I.
Yeah, a lot cooler.
Super cool.
Minus Snoopy, obviously. But.
Yeah, that's a ding. That's a ding.
Yeah.
In the column, yeah.
But, Bugs Bunny. So.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
A lot of really racist-ass Bugs Bunny cartoons coming up.
There was, when we were at Blockbuster, they re-released a bunch of... Like Donald Duck Nazi cartoons.
They released like all the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes.
It was all wartime stuff, right?
Yeah, and they had to keep putting these disclaimers at the front, like, at this time, we were all big mad, just so you know.
Yeah, that was some harrowing shit to watch as an adult in the 2000s. Anyway, so that's true. So WW2, pretty cool. Hank's medically disqualified from service.
Whew.
Not because of his spina bifida.
Oh.
But because he fell off a bull during a rodeo in Texas.
See, now this is making me think that I was probably right all along whenever with Alonzo. This is a family that falls off of things.
They fall off stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, because his spine was already injured, it led to a major back injury, which probably would have not been so bad if he did not have spina bifida occulta. Sure. He's disqualified from service, which is, I guess, good news for him. Mm-hmm. Although every single one of his bandmates, they're all drafted.
Oh, bummer.
So he's got no band left.
Hmm.
So, but he does, he cobbles together a replacement band.
Uh-huh.
Someone's got to keep those ladies entertained.
Exactly. Is a bunch of other guys with spina bifida?
It's a bunch of handy capable folks.
Love the music. The stage presence, very bad. Very terrible.
I should not have seen this show right after They Might Be Giants show, because what a letdown.
I was confused when they all came out in recliners. Very comfortable looking recliners.
Mm-hmm. So he gets a replacement band. But a lot of those members quit pretty quickly because they recognize right off the bat that Hank's alcoholism is getting real bad.
Oh.
And so he is once again left without a band. Now he is still working at the radio station. His show is becoming more regular. So that's good.
Yeah.
Let's see. In August 1942, the radio station fires him for, quote, habitual drunkenness.
Mm. Alleged.
Alleged. It's in quotes here. I don't want to be sued. Not long after, Hank meets a man named Roy Acuff. You familiar with the name Roy Acuff?
I'm not familiar with Roy Acuff, no.
He's a major, major country music promoter at this time.
Hmm, okay.
I think we probably saw some stuff about him in Memphis when we were
perhaps
there years and years ago when we were at the Sun. I think he's at a part of the Sun Studios thing. But anyway, he's a big deal. He's a big deal in the country music. He's called like the king of country music for a while. I think he plays some, but mostly he's a promoter. Mm. This is very successful. He's you know, one of the gatekeepers. And Roy warns Hank of the dangers of alcohol. And he tells him, quote, "Boy, you've got $1 million voice, but a 10-cent brain." Which I think probably made him want to drink more.
Yeah. Well, then let's take care of one of these things, huh?
So there's no band. Hank doesn't have a job at the station anymore. Roy doesn't believe in him very much. Hank needs money. He goes to work for the Alabama Dry Dock and Shipbuilding Company in Mobile. And then in 1943, Hank meets a woman named Audrey Shepherd. at a medicine show in Banks, Alabama.
What the fuck is a medicine show?
A medicine show. I don't know. Your Depression era Southern knowledge, your bona fides there. Not need a little brushing up. Medicine show. Go ahead.
No. I guess I can tell you what a medicine show is first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's,
you'll probably get it right.
I assume it's like the old MayoClinic.com website where you just like punch in a random symptom and they're like, oh, here's all the horrible things you have. It sounds like you may have jaundice. Depression. Here's a couple cancers we think you probably might have.
Okay.
Except at the medicine show, they also have cures for all of these things at the different booths.
There you go.
Okay.
Now you hit it. All right. This is a snake oil show.
I love it. Yeah. Definitely where raging alcoholic needs to be spending his free time.
Oh yeah. I don't know what was in those bottles. Yeah. Those Laudanum hot dog.
Which one of these aisles is the hangover cure aisle? Is it this one?
This
looks like hepatitis. Alcohol. This is definitely hepatitis. Which one is this? Is hangover? I'm sorry, I was one off.
Oh man, so yeah, the medicine show is this old, the wandering kind of snake oil salesman doing it was a tonic that cures what ails you. Mm-hmm. But they would, some of these would be built up pretty big where they would have people like bands playing and stuff. And it was like almost like a carnival.
I mean, doesn't sound that bad.
No, it sounds like we make some good money.
Yeah,
of some idiots. So Hank meets Audrey Shepherd at a medicine show there, and they hit it off right away. They move in together to a hotel in Mobile for a while. She works also at the dry dock and shipbuilding company. I think he gets her a job there. Mm-hmm. So they can work together, live together. That sounds cool. No problems there.
Yeah, absolutely not.
The next year, they were married by a justice of the peace at a Texaco gas station. In Andalusia.
Andalusia, Alabama.
Alabama. Excellent. Yes, correct.
Fantastic. I'm just imagining everyone in like the European theater looking back and seeing like, oh, I wonder what Hank's doing. Oh, Hank's not. Okay.
Hank's doing bad, guys.
Should we invite Hank over? Should we invite him to the European theater? It seems like.
I am literally fighting for my life.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. I'm in a foxhole.
Yeah.
My feet are getting eaten away by gangrene. There are bombs exploding everywhere. But Hank's doing bad, guys. Yeah.
Hank is banging that lady he found at the medicine show. They're like shacked up in a hotel somewhere, and they got married at a gas station. I don't know.
Someone's got to check on Hank.
Someone's really got to check on Hank.
Not it.
Yeah.
Here's a quote about their wedding. The marriage was technically invalid since Shepherd's divorce from her previous husband did not comply with the legally required 60-day reconciliation period.
Mm.
Couldn't wait 2 months. I saw that Texaco and they were like, this is the one. This is it. September 14th, 1946, Hank auditions for the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, okay.
Grand Ole Opry, for those of you not familiar with the tradition of country music in America, is the mother church of country music, it's often called. It is and in some ways still is like the show. Mm-hmm. It was the place. If you were playing country music, you wanted to be part of the Opry because it was where all the greats played. You name a country legend, they've played Grand Ole Opry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's like the CBGBs of country music.
It's exactly what it is, yes. Actually. It's very good. And so Hank auditions, and he is rejected. They're like, I don't think so. But he's like, I got to get a recording contract. So he thinks to himself, well, Roy Acuff, he thinks I have a 10-cent brain, but maybe he'll sign me. Now, Acuff at the time has a label called Acuff Rose Music. Mm-hmm. Now, Roy Acuff doesn't do like the day-to-day for it. The day-to-day, it's run by Fred Rose, his partner. And so Hank and Audrey decide they're going to ask Frank Rose if they can be on the label. Mm-hmm. So they ambush Rose during his daily ping pong game.
What kind of Wes Anderson-esque music label is this?
You don't do a daily ping pong break?
In my head, it's like a really poorly cut scene, like the camera just snapping back and forth between Hank Williams Sr. and a guy trying to get back to a ping pong match. And back to Hank Williams Sr. and back to the guy trying to get in the ping pong match.
And Audrey sitting
yeah.
face very close to the guy getting back to the ping pong yeah. match. When she says, "Can Hank sing a song for you right now?" Rose agrees. Please, this is my ping pong time. No. Please, just whatever it takes to get you out of here. Hank sings him a song, and Rose is like, "Well, goddamn, that's pretty good." Mm-hmm. He signs Hank to a 6-song contract.
Okay.
Give him a try.
Interesting. Contracts back then, very different.
Very different.
Very, very different.
Very different. One of the songs that Hank recorded for the album was called When God Comes and Gathers His Jewels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was misprinted as When God Comes and Fathers His Jewels, which I think is way better. But despite that, that song and all the other ones, they do really well. Get a lot of radio play. And so Rose decides that they could go bigger. He's like, we can get you pretty big. Mm-hmm. So he gets Hank signed to a contract with MGM Records.
Oh, wow.
And this is a big deal, of course, because MGM is, as you would probably guess, a big deal. Hank's first song he records for MGM is a big hit. It's called Move It On Over.
Oh, even I know that one.
You may be familiar with the George Thorogood version of this song. Mm-hmm. But the original is all Hank Williams. And in 1949, he records Lovesick Blues, which is just huge. It's massive. It's a massive hit. It stays at number one for 4 consecutive months. And then finally, on June 11th, 1949, Hank Williams makes his debut at the Grand Ole Opry.
Whew.
During that performance, he received 6 encores.
Whew. Man.
He's tearing it up.
6 encores. That same year, that's hard to plan for. 6 encores, you know.
Yeah, I'll be honest, yeah. Y'all, I don't know any more songs. That same year, Audrey gives birth to Randall Hank Williams, who you might know better as Hank Williams Jr.
Mm-hmm.
of Monday Night Football.
Rowdy. Got to get right.
All my rowdy friends coming over tonight. I haven't heard a thing about Hank Williams Jr. since he stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And I hope he's just living his best life, just raking in NFL money. What a gig. Anyway, so Hank Williams Sr.'s career is just going crazy. In 1951, he tours with Bob Hope, a bunch of other celebrities. Mm-hmm. This helps Hank to sign a movie deal with MGM Studios. He records another massive hit called There's a Tear in My Beer,
mm-hmm.
which you may be familiar with.
I am very familiar with There's a Tear in My Beer. Mm-hmm. In my beer.
Would you sing it?
Can you sing it for us? There's a tear in my beer because I'm crying for you, dear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. It would go really well with the kids today. They'd love it. He goes on the Perry Como show. He sings Hey Good Looking of What You Got Cooking fame. Mm-hmm. And the next week, I guess Perry Como opens his show by wearing a very Hank Williams style outfit, the cowboy like bolo tie, mm-hmm. cowboy suit and hat, and doing a very bad version of of Hey Good Looking. And so like the world is eating Hank Williams up. Like it's everything's going great. Except for the fact that earlier that year, he for like a very short amount of time, he was admitted to the North Louisiana Sanitarium for treatment of alcoholism.
Okay, but treatment.
Treatment.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not locked up there.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. He got better.
Yeah. They bring him in there, maybe. Give him a little bit of alcohol, just a little bit.
Yeah, just a touch. A layer of the
just
dog.
Just enough to get him back on the road. And then, yeah. Poof.
Yeah. He's okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see how this goes. In November, Hank tried to jump across a gully. Now, he was on a squirrel hunting trip.
Right, of course.
And and he was jumping across a gully, and he misjudged the length.
Of the gully.
Maybe or maybe not. Uh-huh. Yeah, because he was drinking. I don't know if that, I don't know.
I mean, squirrel hunting trips, so boring otherwise. They really are. They're so tiny. And
I'll give
so
you
annoying.
$6. You can jump across that ravine. Ooh, you're on. So he falls into the gully.
Mm-hmm.
He has to go in in December into the hospital for a spinal fusion.
Oh, no.
Because, again, his spinal cord is not,
still bad.
Not doing great.
Yeah, it's still bad.
Yeah, still bad. He was discharged on Christmas Eve against medical advice.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you can't, we don't think you should leave. And he's like, it's Christmas Eve. I'm not going to spend Christmas here.
Right.
And they were like, it's fair point. Tell you what, here's a ton of fucking painkillers.
Also, just, you know, Hank, we have to spend Christmas Eve here. So fuck right off.
<Boo-boo>. So now he starts getting into painkillers pretty heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not slowed down in the drinking at all.
Oh, okay. I mean, yeah, you can do both, I guess.
Okay, let's find out if you can. The next year, he and Audrey get divorced.
Oh, I guess you can't do both.
I mean, you can. It just requires some lifestyle changes. Right,
yeah, it requires getting rid of a lot of your wives.
Yeah, yeah. But it does involve sometimes finding new fun wives. Because later that summer, Hank meets a woman named Billie Jean Jones. And Hank starts spending a lot of time with her. Now, she was the girlfriend of one of the other singers who was part of the Grand Ole Opry crew. But she likes Hank better. Hmm. And you can't. It's the heart wants what the heart wants.
YOLO. Know what I mean? YOLO.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yo, bolos and YOLOs. Mm-hmm. That's the whole story of Hank Williams. But he starts spending so much time with her that he actually starts missing a lot of appearances at the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, but she works at the Grand Ole Opry.
No, she's the girlfriend of someone who works at the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, okay. So there's really no excuse to not make
it. I think she lives real close.
Yeah, I would figure. Yeah,
I think they both are in Nashville at this point. Mm. On August 11th, Hank is dismissed from the Opry.
Oh, no.
You're not playing here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He said why, and they told him habitual drunkenness and the whole like missing shows right, thing didn't go over great. So he goes on tour again, and the reviews came back and said when he was sober, the shows were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, of course, he was drunk, mm-hmm. and the shows then were very bad.
Yes,
very bad. In October, he marries Billie Jean Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And not long after that, he realizes that he is having heart problems.
Oh, man. The one thing that was actually not in such bad shape.
Yeah. Now it is in bad
shape. Now it is. Okay.
And it's mostly from the alcohol and the drugs.
Uh-huh. Yes. And the gully jumping. I can't imagine that was really easy on the heart.
I don't think that was the best thing. No. In Oklahoma City, while he's on tour, he meets a man named Horace Toby Marshall, who said that he was a doctor.
No records exist of this place.
And Hank is like, this is crazy. I need a doctor. This is great.
Wow, what a coincidence.
And Toby says, I know what you need. And he writes Hank a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will note here at this point, Toby is not a doctor.
Right, sure.
Toby had paid the Chicago School of Applied Science $25 for a diploma.
Okay.
And on the diploma, he gave them a fake name,
mm-hmm.
Dr. C.W. Lemon, which is what he would use in writing scripts. And so anyway, he writes a prescription for Hank, and the prescription is amphetamines.
I was going to get amphetamines. That sounded like
amphetamines.
Yeah.
Seconal.
Is it barbiturate?
Seconal. Let's see. It's a type of barbiturate.
Yes, there you go.
Very good. There you go.
Very good. You remember.
Oh, yeah, you know pills.
You remember your ancient pill poppers.
So amphetamines, barbiturates, chloral hydrate, and morphine.
Okay.
He says, this is going to fix you right up.
This is going to turn you into a very fine jelly inside of your body. That's what's going to happen.
You are not going to care one lick about your heart problems in a second. This may surprise you to learn, but it actually, so this doctor's prescription actually ends up making Hank's heart problems worse.
Really?
It's very strange. And he's still, of course, drinking heavily.
Uh-huh. I'm sure that's the doctor ordered. Dr. Toby is probably
you're
going
to want to wash it down with, whiskey, no, moonshine. You need moonshine. Grain alcohol is what you need. At the end of that year, Hank was supposed to perform a New Year's Eve show in Charleston, West Virginia. But the weather was bad. It was snowing. It was terrible. He couldn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
So he hires a college kid to drive him up to the show. from, I think he's in Nashville. No, yeah, Nashville.
That's responsible.
And it's not that far of a drive, yeah, really.
I'm sure you explained, I'm on way too much morphine to drive a car right now. Like a lot more than you would think.
I think probably if Hank Williams asks you to drive and then passes out in the back seat, you know the deal.
Every so 4 hours, stab me with these needles. That's all you got to do.
Don't ask any questions. Yeah. So they get going. They're driving along. Now, when they're in Knoxville, the college kid has to go fetch a doctor because Hank had been affected with the combination of chloral hydrate and alcohol. So he finds a doctor named...
And where's Dr. Toby in the middle of all this? Is he just like not answering his phone?
That's weird, right?
I know, isn't it?
He's not answering his cell phone in 19... What is this? 30, 50? I don't know. He's nowhere to be found. Where are we here?
But so he finds another doctor.
Named P.H. Cardwell.
Okay, that sounds like a real doctor. He has initials.
Sounds real to me. I mean, he's got a strong jaw.
Yeah. No C.W. Lemon, but it's something.
No.
I get
you're just trolling people if you're calling yourself Dr. Lemon. So Dr. P.H. Cardwell, very well balanced doctor. That's a P.H. joke.
Oh.
He injected Hank with two shots of vitamin B12.
Hey.
Which was laced with a quarter grain of morphine.
Hank said, don't charge me for this. I have some in the glove compartment. Don't you dare.
I have my own.
Yeah.
And he's feeling a little better. By that, I mean, when he checks out of the hotel, the porters have to carry Hank to the car.
Oh, he's probably doing real well.
Yeah.
That sounds like.
He's feeling better?
Yeah. If I have to leave a hotel, but I can't under my own power, I probably had a really nice time at the hotel.
I would think that's probably true. Hank also has severe hiccups.
Oh, did he not know the trick?
He didn't know the trick.
Oh, that's a shame.
He didn't listen to this podcast.
That's too bad.
It's too bad.
Hank Williams.
He was not drinking.
Hank Williams, despite your, drinking ability, you are not a fish.
So Hank's in pretty bad shape. He cannot stop hiccuping. So between the fact that he can't walk and he's hiccuping so much, they cancel the New Year's Eve show.
Oh.
But they book a new show on January 1st in Pennsylvania, I think, or Ohio.
Oh,
a little bit north. So
I know you're almost dead and can't play on New Year's Eve, but what about playing?
Good news and bad news.
Yeah. How about you play tomorrow, 12 hours from here? I bet you'll be fine by then. You still have that college kid somewhere around here, right?
So the college kid is driving and he gets as far as Bristol, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty close to me, actually.
Hey.
Not too far. A little down south, yeah. So now we're in my territory. Mm-hmm. By the time we get to Bristol, this kid has been driving for like 20 hours. Mm-hmm. He didn't sleep at the hotel because he was worried about Hank dying on his watch. It's not what you want. So he calls a local taxi company and hires a relief driver. He says, come on, we'll swap out.
Mm-hmm.
You drive for a while, I'll take a nap, we'll switch, and we'll do this together.
Right. And then you poke Hank, I poke Hank. Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much. So this local taxi driver named Don Surface, he joins him and he agrees to drive them. Now Don is sitting in front. College kid is in the passenger seat. Hank is in the back, of course. Mm-hmm. They drove until they stopped for gas at Oak Hill, West Virginia, where they realized Hank had been dead for so long that rigor mortis had already set
in. Oh, so close.
Not very.
Well.
Not terribly close.
You know, it's bad when you have to think back, like, which state do we turn his dead body into? When did we cross?
Which police do we call about this?
When did we cross into West Virginia? I think I heard him cough. When I said, hey, Hank, we're in West Virginia, I think I heard him cough.
I think so.
Yeah, I'll say West Virginia.
Yeah. Let's say, you know what?
Yeah.
We both agree, right, Don? Uh-huh. Right, Don? Don, look at my eyes. Right, Don? We heard him cough in West Virginia. So Hank has died. Now, of course, you can read all about Hank's funeral and the non-ghost legacy of Hank Williams, which is extraordinary.
Right, but who cares?
But not on this podcast. Exactly. We don't. So the ghost of Hank Williams still haunts the Ryman Auditorium, which is a former home of the Grand Ole Opry.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, the Opry has since moved to a different venue, but the Ryman is the one. And Hank's ghost did not get the memo that they moved. And he's like, I'm staying here. He is sometimes heard backstage talking, yelling, and sometimes singing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like his old hits or like new stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think his old hits. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys heard about Jason Isbell? No Hank Williams ghost. I haven't heard about Jason Isbell.
Oh, great. This is my song. Yeah. Fuck that guy. I love Jason Isbell so much. Let's see. So where are we here? So he's haunting the Ryman. The Ryman's actually pretty haunted. And he's one of the ghosts there. Oh, here we go. Every once in a while, people will see his ghost wearing the full cowboy suit, bolo tie and hat, holding his guitar backstage. He's also been seen at some of the nearby bars, usually and most notably at Tootsie's Orchid Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tootsie's did not open until 1960.
Okay.
And Hank died in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
So it opened several years after his death. But by the time his ghost was strong enough to venture out of the Ryman and find a drink,
right,
Tootsie's was there. And he really liked it.
If anyone's ghost was going to be an adventurous ghost, it's going to be Hank Sr. That makes sense.
If it's adventure to a bar, mm-hmm. for sure. For sure. So he's sometimes seen at Tootsie's at the bar drinking. Sometimes it's a full form, but it usually takes the form of a Hank Williams-shaped white mist.
Oh, that's grosser. I don't know. I wasn't prepared for how gross that was going to be.
I'm not sure how you look at a white mist and be like, that humanoid shape, that's Hank Williams.
Oh, the one doubled over and sleeping on the bar? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, it was Hank Williams. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, spine just a little out of whack. Yeah, okay. Uh-huh. All right.
Some guy like walks in, like jumps onto the bar stool and orders a drink. And they're like, that was the mist of Hank Sr. you just said. And you're like, oh, felt gross.
So that's it. Hank haunts the Ryman and Tootsie's. And I have some kind of exciting news to share. This November, producer Ryan and I are going to Nashville.
Oh, really?
We're going to the Ryman.
Hey.
To see the Lone Bellow.
Mm-hmm.
I am so excited, mostly for the chance to go to the Ryman Auditorium.
Right. But
to see my favorite band, but also because here's the pledge I'm going to make, mm-hmm. to all the listeners. I am going to get Ryan drunk enough to agree to go on a ghost hunt.
I mean, it's
in Nashville.
It's a ghost hunt at another bar. It shouldn't be that
hard. It's gonna be pretty easy. We are gonna sneak first backstage onto the Ryman. That's gonna be so hard.
Be very, very dangerous.
That is a very that's a place is locked down pretty tight. We're gonna try that first. But yeah, Tootsie's will be easier.
Yeah.
We'll go. And we'll see if we can find a white mist that looks like Hank Williams Sr. We'll do it. So if you wanna that'll be content for Ghost Plus. So think about joining that. Patrick, any questions about the ghost of Hank Williams Sr.?
No, I answered them all myself, actually. So no questions anymore. Yeah,
okay, great.
Got them all.
Great. All right. Well, that's going to do it then for us. I guess this week our audio editor, no, wait, me, I did the notes.
Yeah.
Me, Clayton Smith.
You did it.
I left that out of my notes this time, but I took all the notes that I didn't credit myself for. All the funny jokes this week were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor, there he is. He's Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Kai Valonis, Jennifer Jones, and Sam Murdoch. Our merchandise is from Fox and Quill Studio. Go follow them on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. And that's going to do it for us, I think, for now. And this is real advice. Do not combine your amphetamines, your chloral hydrate, your barbiturates, and your morphine with alcohol. Because otherwise, it's genuinely possible we might see you here next week on Is This a Ghost?
Just one at a time, guys. Just take it easy.
Just don't be. Our lawyers say we can't say that. Our lawyers say no, Patrick.
Yeah. And our lawyers are terrible. So you know it must be bad.
And if they know, holy shit, you guys, please don't do it.